Oh, we on this bad
we
boy.
We on this bad boy.
We on it. Boys, it's a podcast where we talk about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max. What's up, Max?
Not too much. We were just listening to some Sabbath earlier.
Some Sweet Leaf.
Sweet Leaf.
Getting our Sweet Leaf on. I really appreciated that one of the comments was, this song inspired me to be a dentist. And I don't know if that's a joke that I just don't get, or if it really is just that absurd.
I don't know where the intersection of marijuana and dentistry is, but apparently it inspired that dude to feel some things.
Is it bad for your teeth? I don't really know. If you know, tweet at us or something. I don't know.
We won't call the cops, I promise.
We will not narc you out. Anyway, we didn't come here to talk about weed. We came here to talk about death.
And Black Sabbath.
And Black Sabbath. Maybe. That's usually up to Max, who has prepared a topic for us to discuss. Max, what have you researched this week?
This was actually sparked by a fun story I read on the internet as I'm cruising around and reading death-adjacent stories.
As we do.
Let's just kind of launch into it. If you just want to reach under the couch.
Of course.
And see what we got under there.
You know, this was the first week that I was expecting that and not surprised by it. It was really tempting when you went up to go to the bathroom earlier to
sneak a peek,
but I didn't. I was
proud of you. Thank you. I appreciate that you do this all the time.
I was a good boy. It's a baggie, but it's not of weed. it's a lot of pennies.
It's pennies.
Yeah, it's pennies in a Ziploc bag. What's up with this?
Well, do you know who is the star of the penny?
Harrison Ford.
No.
It's Abraham Lincoln.
So we're going to do a little bit of trivia right now.
Okay.
Do you know how Abraham Lincoln intersects with death? Besides, like, the obvious, he is dead?
Yeah, you took my answer. The guy who killed him is dead?
He is. He, like, ran and escaped into a barn, and then they just set the barn on fire instead of doing anything about it.
Is that John Wilkes Booth?
John Wilkes Booth, yeah.
Wow, okay, nice.
One of my major lookalikes. I look a lot like John Wilkes Booth, which is very funny.
Ooh, please don't be alarmed.
Yeah.
If you see Max.
Abraham Lincoln is buried in a mausoleum.
Okay.
Also, fun fact, Abraham Lincoln was one of the first recorded people to use a choke slam in a wrestling context.
Right. I heard he was a wrestler.
He was a wrestler, and I don't really know, like, that seems like a pretty normal thing to do when you're fighting someone, is to throw them by whatever means you can get your hands on them, and the throat seems pretty normal.
It's kind of nature's handle, you know?
The throat. But yeah, I guess he was one of the first ones to do it in, like, a legitimate recorded fight back when he was just living in Illinois and didn't really have anything else to do.
Hell yeah. That is awesome.
Yeah. I kind of had, like, kind of a bummer week because I was sick.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get in those depressive states where you're like, I don't really want to learn about anything. There's no albums I really want to listen to. And I was just goofing around on the internet, and I saw that Abraham Lincoln was credited with inventing the choke slam. And I was like, oh, that was neat. I feel a little better now. That's nice.
Wow. And I thought the most impressive part of his presidency was the abolishment of slavery.
Well, he did that, abolishing slavery. It was choke slams.
Well, it was kind of the precedent for awesome deeds throughout his life.
Yeah, he's very rad.
He got off on a good foot.
So today we're going to be talking about mausolea. Mausolea is the plural of mausoleum. I'm probably going to screw that up throughout the episode.
Mausolea.
Yeah, instead of mausoleums.
I feel like there's a hippie somewhere who has named their daughter Mausolea.
It's good. It's a good name.
Yeah.
But we're going to be talking about cool mausoleums, weird mausoleums, important mausoleums, and so on and so forth.
All right.
So without further ado, let's crack into the topic. with the unsponsored, unofficial pre-Dead Boys crack into the moment. Not yet officially brought to you by LaCroix, although I do see you on your grind on their own Twitter.
Yeah, I will get Senpai to notice me. And Senpai is LaCroix. We just can't get away from the anime references, can we? Despite the fact that neither of us watch anime.
Oh, boy.
Sorry. Are you all right?
Well, you just almost made me shoot carbonated water out of my nose, so...
Not on my microphone, buddy.
Thank you for doing that meaningful brand engagement there.
Yeah. And thank you to LaCroix. We love you.
We love you. Dorian, do you know what a mausoleum is?
I feel like I have to say yes, because we talked about them in our New Orleans death culture episode a little bit.
We did.
So, if I forget, then that means that I wasn't paying attention and that I was bad. So, I'm gonna try. They're basically above ground buildings that dead people are stored in, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty vague term. And I had to look it up myself to make sure that I wasn't just confusing it with a sepulcher or some other weird death thing. So here's a definition of mausoleum, straight from our good friend, Wikipedia.
A mausoleum is an external freestanding building constructed as a monument enclosing the interment space or burial chamber of a deceased person or people. A monument without the interment is a cenotaph. A mausoleum may be considered a type of tomb, or the tomb may be considered to be within the mausoleum. In the United States, the term may be used for a burial vault below a larger facility, such as a church. The Cathedral of Our Lady of the Angels in Los Angeles, California, for example, has 6,000 sepulchral and cinerary urn spaces for interments in the lower level of the building. It is known as the crypt mausoleum. In Europe, these underground vaults are sometimes called crypts or catacombs.
Yeah. So that's a mausoleum. It's generally a pretty sizable building that you can walk around in that houses dead bodies or ashes. You can either be interred in a mausoleum whole, like they'll just put your body in there, or you can be cremated and they'll store your cremains in the mausoleum.
Okay.
They're kind of like apartment buildings for bodies.
Okay.
It's all stacked up. They save space. The guy in the tomb next to you is looking at your blue apron all the time. He's thinking about nabbing your
Amazon packages.
Your Amazons. Typical apartment stuff.
Right.
They are kind of like a next level above graveyards in how they are architecturally supposed to be interacted with by the living. So graveyards were originally spaces where the public was invited to visit and walk around and contemplate the space and enjoy your time spent there. It was almost like a public park. At least they were before we got all weird about cemeteries and didn't want anything to do with them and try to shove them to like the edges of towns and things like that.
Ew, gross. Corpses.
There's bodies in there.
Ugh.
So mausoleums, especially now, are typically pretty well furnished and they're like fairly inviting places. We have a few around here. You know, you can go in and they have benches set up and some reflecting stuff and they're air conditioned in the summer and they're kind of nice. They're constructed to be inviting, comfortable spaces for both the living and the dead. So what's the history of mausoleums? It goes pretty far back. We invented dying pretty soon after we invented being alive.
Yeah. Before the wheel, even.
They go all the way back to about 377 BC, to be exact. So I'm very sorry for what you're about to have to read. But I did put in a lot of pronunciation keys, and we do have the magic of editing.
Ooh, that's dense.
So let's take a pass at this.
All right, take one. In 377 BC, the city of Halicarnassus...
Nice.
...was the capital of a small kingdom along the Mediterranean coast of Asia Minor. It was in that year that the ruler of this land, Hecatomnus of Mile Assa...
Mile Assa.
I think it's more like my Lassa, but you did that so that you could write, you could type ass in all caps.
I did.
Good work.
The stressed syllable.
Solid goof. It was in that year the ruler of this land, Hecatomnus of My Lassa, died and left control of the kingdom to his son, Mausolus. Hecatomnus, a local satrap to the Persians, had been ambitious and had taken control of several of the neighboring cities and districts. Then, Mausolus, during his reign, extended the territory even further, so that it eventually included most of southwestern Asia Minor. Mausolus, with his queen Artemisia, ruled over Halicarnassus and the surrounding territory for 24 years. Though he was descended from the local people, Mausolus spoke Greek and admired the Greek way of life and government. He founded many cities of Greek design along the coast and encouraged Greek democratic traditions. Then in 353 BC, Mausolus died, leaving his queen Artemisia, who was also his sister, brokenhearted. It was the custom in Caria for rulers to marry their own sisters.
No, I don't know what they're doing in this area. I don't get it. I don't know. Keep reading.
Gross.
Yeesh.
As a tribute to him, she decided to build him the most splendid tomb in the known world. It became a structure so famous that Mausolus' name is now associated with all stately tombs through the word mausoleum. The building, rich with statuary and carvings in relief, was so beautiful and unique, it became one of the seven wonders of the ancient world.
How much do you want to talk about how apparently everyone in this kingdom was just like, marry your sister, it's cool, everyone's doing it?
I would have to,
You're an only child.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have step-siblings, but still wouldn't marry any of them.
Yeah. Just because everyone else is doing it is not an excuse to marry your own sister. I don't know how steeped in traditional marriage customs they were. And maybe it was like a celibate marriage just so they could pass money down. But also, if you're like the king of a country, it seems like you could just change the law and be like, hey, I don't even want to marry my sister in name. We're just going to update the law.
No one was too opposed to it. I guess I can kind of see, because dating can be frustrating. And if you want to skip that whole process, this is one way to do it. I can probably think of better ways to do that.
Absolutely.
I would recommend those other ways first. And I would not recommend marrying your sibling.
Yeah. So aside from marrying his own sibling, this dude, Mausolus, was a ruler of pretty fair renown. It seems like he just wanted to really do his death right.
Yeah.
And he did do it pretty right. Like, it ended up being one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. I was trying to remember what those were. I know the Colossus of Rhodes was one, which was a big statue that boats used to sail under.
Yeah.
The Great Pyramid of Egypt. And the Hanging Gardens of Babylon was one, which is weird because that song didn't come out until like the early 80s on the Cure's album. That's my favorite Cure song, and I really wanted to put that joke in there, and it did.
Oh,
you could put a little sad slide whistle noise.
I don't listen to the Cure enough, I guess. Sorry, you goth nerd.
So his tomb does look pretty impressive, to his credit. If you want to scroll down, you'll be able to see a picture.
Whoa!
In its original glory.
It kind of looks like if you went out and bought a Lego set that was a specific architectural building, but then you took your other stockpile of normal Lego bricks and you just wanted to build it 3 feet higher.
Much higher than it normally was.
Yeah, that's what this mausoleum looks like. Comically tall.
Yeah, I don't know what scale this is to, but it's very funny because there does appear to be like 60% of the base of the building is just a large pedestal, and then it's the actual building.
And those are doorways, right?
Yeah.
So how do you get up there?
I don't know if you have to rappel up the side of the building. I don't know if there's stairs on the other side.
That's buck wild, man.
But you can see how it would be really beautiful. I do have a description of what the mausoleum would have looked like in its original form, if you want to go ahead and read that.
The tomb was erected on a hill overlooking the city. The whole structure sat in an enclosed courtyard. At the center of the courtyard was a stone platform on which the tomb sat. A stairway flanked by stone lions led to the top of the platform, which bore along its outer walls many statues of gods and goddesses. At each corner, stone warriors mounted on horseback guarded the tomb. At the center of the platform, the marble tomb rose as a square, tapering block to one-third of the mausoleum's 148 feet, or 45-meter height.
It's huge.
Massive. This section was covered with bas-reliefs showing action scenes, including the Battle of the Centaurs with the Lapiths, and Greeks in combat with the Amazons, a race of warrior women.
Rawr. I can't do that. I can't roll my tongue.
I did a bad job of it. On the top of this section of the tomb, 36 slim columns, 10 per side, with each corner sharing one column between two sides, rose for another third of the height. Standing between each pair of columns was a statue. Behind the columns was a solid, cella-like block that carried the weight of the tomb's massive roof. The roof, which comprised most of the final third of the height, was pyramidal. Perched on the top was a quadriga, four massive horses pulling a chariot, in which rode images of Mausolus and Artemisia.
Yeah, so this thing is a huge structure. I mean, if you're going to name every succeeding large tomb after something, I guess this would have been a pretty good one to name everything after.
How many people were buried in this thing?
I think it was just our dude. I think it was just Mausolus.
Just one dude.
Yeah.
Wow, that's bougie.
It's extremely bougie. And, I mean, this is almost 400 BC, and they're building up to a height of 145 feet, which is massive.
Like, yeah.
This would have been an imposition to everyone who would have seen it.
That's half a football field tall.
That's true. Like a vertical. So if you take a football field and you stand on an end.
You know. You flip up that football field and run halfway up it, you'd have the best touchdown run in history.
Now, it's not still around. The original mausoleum was destroyed sometime before the year 1400, but you can still go to the ruins. They're located in the town of Bodrum in Turkey. If you scroll down, you can see a photo of the ruins.
Not as impressive.
No.
Look at that lone log just chilling in the middle of this field of rocks. Like, yeah.
Sorry. A single pillar.
Sorry, I'm a disappointment.
I scoped it out on Google Maps, and it's just right across the street from, like, a Turkish grocer. And if that's not evidence for the cruel, unrelenting march of time, I don't really know what else is.
That's a very evocative metaphor.
Yeah. But, if you did your tomb big enough to have every subsequent tomb named after it, you did a pretty good job. And to have it last for almost 2,000 years is also pretty good.
The legacy stands even if the place that held your body did not.
Yeah, I wonder what they did with his body, too. Because I really doubt that it's in there somewhere.
Probably ate it.
They did the Greek thing and just made a bathtub out of it. And we're like, all right, I don't know. We found this really beautiful, tall mausoleum, and we're going to start bathing in it now. I don't know.
Is everything a bathtub to them? I really want to bathe in it. Ooh.
So mausoleums have been a fairly popular way to bury people over the course of time. People have lived in a lot of parts of the world where it's been fairly impractical to bury the dead in the traditional way. Maybe the ground is too sandy or too rocky. Or, before we figured out coffins and caskets, maybe you just don't want a bunch of wild animals coming around and digging up all your dead relatives and eating them.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's not great. Yeah. There's even still a lot of mausolea in places like New Orleans, as you mentioned earlier.
Right.
Where it's just tough to dig.
Yeah. You can bury someone. But no guarantee that they will not explode out of the ground when there is a storm.
Yeah.
That was my favorite.
These big floating coffins.
Oh, yeah.
Now, one of the major things about interring remains or cremains in a mausoleum is that the cost can be fairly prohibitive. So there are some of the big apartment-style ones.
Do you think that there's like a mid-range kind of condo mausoleum where it's still small, but it looks nice, like... Do you have the whole range of economic options?
Like, you have two floors instead of just the one. Another guy does your landscaping?
Can I have a studio mausoleum where it's just a loft, like a very big, open, barren space, but I have some IKEA furniture in there if you want to chill?
Like, instead of putting your body in its own little tomb, they just put like four or five bodies in one, and it's your little studio coffin?
Yes.
if you're rich enough, or I guess like a president... Someone important. Mm-hmm. You can get a private mausoleum constructed for you and your family if you want to roll really big. And this is where a connection to Abraham Lincoln's tomb comes in. So Abraham Lincoln was the 16th president of the United States.
And he invented the choke slam.
He invented the choke slam. And he is buried in a massive tomb in Springfield, Illinois. So more architectural descriptions are forthcoming if you want to scroll down and read that.
Sure. The tomb is in the center of a 12.5-acre plot. Constructed of granite, it has a rectangular base surmounted by a 117-foot-high obelisk and a semicircular entranceway. A bronze reproduction of sculptor Gutzon Borglum's head of Lincoln in the U.S. Capitol rests on a pedestal in front of the entranceway.
I love Borglum.
Gutzon Borglum!
He was the guy who did Mount Rushmore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was a little underwhelmed by it, but given the time period that he was working in, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
You did good with what you had.
In his defense, we did go to Mount Rushmore on the 4th of July, and our van broke down going up the mountain.
Ooh.
It started smoking. I don't know if you were in my van, but...
Was that our trip?
Yeah, I think I saw Mount Rushmore with you.
I don't think we went to Mount Rushmore on that trip.
Oh, so you've been independently. Yeah, it's kind of a downer.
Yeah. Man, that's a shitty thing to have happen.
Yeah, it was like 4th of July and there were just back-to-back-to-back cars. And we were going up this big, tall mountain and the van just started smoking. And we were like, oh no.
Damn, that sucks. In the center of the terrace, a large and ornate base supports the obelisk. On the walls of the base are 37 hewn stones cut to represent raised shields, each engraved with the name of a state at the time the tomb was built. Each shield is connected to another by two raised bands, and thus the group forms an unbroken chain encircling the base. Four bronze statues adorn the corners of the ladder. In front of the obelisk and above the entrance stands a full-length statue of Lincoln. Corridors lead from the rotunda to the burial room at the rear of the memorial. Located in niches along the corridor walls are eight statues by prominent sculptors depicting various phases of Lincoln's life. Four bronze tablets on the walls are engraved with the farewell address, the Gettysburg address, a portion of the second inaugural address, and a biographical sketch. Large gold stars and sets of 12 at each corner of the memorial represent the 48 states in the Union at the time of its remodeling. The burial room features black and white marble walls and a ceiling of gold leaf. At its center stands the cenotaph, a 7-ton block of reddish marble inscribed with Lincoln's name and the years he lived. It marks the appropriate location of the burial vault, which is 30 inches behind and 10 feet below. Along the south wall of the burial room are four crypts containing the remains of Mrs. Lincoln and three of Lincoln's four sons, Edward, Willie, and Tad.
Tad. Yeah, so I'm a fairly austere person. Like, I don't enjoy spending money on myself. And as I was going through this, I was like, man, this is a lot of stuff. This is really kind of gross how much stuff there is. And then I was like, no, wait, Abraham Lincoln effectively ended slavery. Yeah, this is fine.
Cut him some slack. Yeah. I love that gold leaf ceiling, man. That's pretty cool.
You want to see a picture of it? Scroll down.
Absolutely, I do.
It's popping. It's a big tomb.
It's very... nice. I didn't have a better word than nice. But it is. It's very clean and tidy, and the gold is a little more subdued than what I was expecting.
Yeah. Now, that's the specific room that Abraham Lincoln's body is buried in.
Okay.
But this is a place people are invited to be in. That's the thing about mausoleums. As much as they are a resting place, they're a place for the public to engage with a historical figure like Abraham Lincoln. Hmm. However, in the past, people engaged with the body of Abraham Lincoln a little too much.
Uh-oh.
So you read earlier that Lincoln is buried 10 feet deep. Do you have any idea why he might be buried 10 feet deep instead of the traditional 6?
Did he get pranked real hard? Did people try to steal his body?
People tried to steal his body.
Jeez.
Well, so one of the problems that arises when you have a large public building is theft. If you think about it, the tomb is open to the public every day. And you can head right on in and sightsee and case the whole joint. So on November 7th, 1876, a group of thieves broke into Lincoln's tomb and attempted to make off with the...
I'm sorry, I'm not going to let you... I'm not going to let you move any farther until I really savor that.
A group of nasty thieves.
Nasty boys nasty. Tried to make out with Abe.
They were just like, hey, we keep visiting this tomb, and, you know, I've always wondered what it would be like to make out with the president.
He's a hunk.
He's a hunk.
I wonder what it'd be like. God. It's the official stance of the Pre-Dead Boys podcast that we do not endorse, encourage, or otherwise condone necrophilia of any sort. Right, Max? Max is kind of...
Correct, especially okay. Presidential.
You gave me a look like you were not sure... You probably were just unsure of what I was saying. But you looked like, I don't know.
I don't know.
There might be a case. No, don't make out with dead people,
please. Don't do that. But these guys tried to make off with the body.
Oh, okay.
That's the word that's the preposition that is supposed to go in there. So here's an excerpt from the Chicago Tribune from the day after the attempted theft.
Horrible! Dastardly attempt to despoil the Lincoln Monument. Thieves trying to steal the bones of the martyr president. Warning given and steps taken to arrest them. Elmer Washburn and his assistants waiting in the dark. The robbers interrupted by accident and contrived to escape.
I like how old news stories would just kind of give you the bullet points up at the top. Like, they couldn't decide on one headline.
How about five of them?
How about five different headlines?
Yeah,
including
sure.
One that just says, horrible.
Horrible! Oh, that's six, then, if you include that one.
Horrible.
What's in the news today?
Horrible.
Folds newspaper, throws it in the garbage.
I mean, it shows you the time doesn't really change, because that's how I mostly feel when I look in the news today.
Horrible.
So, horrible.
Yep. Springfield, Illinois, November 7th.
An attempt... Dateline.
Did Dateline exist in this time? An attempt was made this evening to perpetuate one of the most infamous outrages which the mind of man can conceive of. That of kissing a dead pre... No.
No.
That of stealing the bones and ashes of Abraham Lincoln. Unfortunately, the perpetrators escaped, leaving, however, the evidences of their crime behind them. And though the clues are next to nothing, if human ingenuity can track them, it will be done. Somehow or other, no one exactly knows how J.C. Power, the custodian of the Lincoln Monument, became impressed with the idea that there were designs upon the remains, and he communicated his suspicions to Leonard Swett and Robert Lincoln. They could hardly believe that anyone, even the meanest and lowest scoundrel in the land, could conceive such a thing.
We give old-timey people a lot of harshness for having dumb names, like Phineas. But J.C. Power and Leonard Swett are both incredible names.
Yeah, they're very, very strong names.
So there was this gang in Illinois that counterfeited a ton of stuff. One of their members, Ben Boyd, got picked up by the police and thrown in jail. So the rest of the gang decided that instead of just breaking Boyd out of prison like adults, they would steal Lincoln's body and hold it for $200,000 in 1867 money, which is like $4.5 million today.
Oof.
In ransom money, and also ask for Boyd's freedom. Their plan got leaked, however, and they got interrupted while they were trying to like pop open the tomb and lift his big, huge crypt out of there.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they just like busted into the room with lanterns and were like, what are you doing? And they were like heaving this out of this massive tomb.
Why would you ever think that the tomb of a president is just not going to be, no one's going to notice you, you know? Also, you just got greedy. You could have just busted your boy out. They were like, well, let's bust him out, but also...
Let's bust Lincoln out first.
Let's make a few mil in the process. Yeah.
So they got interrupted and they hightailed it out of there. They fled, but they did eventually get caught. And they were sentenced to 10 years in prison, which in 2018 years is 178 years.
Oh.
So they really got the book thrown at them.
What, inflation applies to
inflation,
years as well?
Year inflation.
Oh, okay. I did not know that.
They got 178 2018 years in prison.
If all of our jokes about reptilians didn't delegitimize our podcast, that goof certainly will.
Oh, yeah, you have to account for inflation in any old-timey number you see. Like, we think that old-timey people were only, like, 5.5 feet tall. But in reality, they were all 6 feet tall, like normal people. You just have to adjust for height inflation.
So you're telling me that Mausolus's mausoleum was actually 350
like billions of feet tall.
Yeah.
Now, not all public mausolea are subject to such nefarious misdeeds. In fact, some are downright fancy. A little bougie.
Ooh.
Chicago has one called the Queen of Heaven Mausoleum, which is really beautiful. It's got a lot of rose coloring, if you want to check that out.
Wow, it's very pretty. Pretty lighting.
Kind of looks like a Wes Anderson movie,
it
actually.
It does. I really like the posh couches that you can sit on in this one, too. It is pretty inviting.
Yeah. Like, there's these nice designed couches and marble walls, and then you look over on the left, and there are just a bunch of crosses.
Yeah.
Where there are people interred right across from these fancy, fancy couches.
Yeah. Love the flooring pattern here, too. It's very pretty.
It's very nice. It's like seashell almost.
It is. I would stay here for a beach vacation.
Yeah, it does look like a corny grandma beach house you would be in.
It totally does.
Another really beautiful one I came across is the Roseland Mausoleum in Detroit. So maybe if we ever get up to Detroit to check out those cryogenics places, we can go pop in this mausoleum as well.
Where people are dead the way they're supposed to be. Yeah. This is very cool. It's very stately. Looks like a little mini White House or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big white marbly building, and there's a lot of pillars on the inside. Wow. They all have really pretty carpeting.
Yeah, you got two stories of pillars.
And it kind of looks like a library.
It does.
The library that we have here in Columbus, the big one downtown, it looks a lot like this. A lot of white everywhere, a lot of natural light.
That's kind of the shocking part for me, is that so much natural light is allowed into this place.
Oh, yeah, look at the next one, too.
Wow, this just looks like an old bank.
Yeah.
Instead of accounts of money, it's accounts of deaths.
Recorded deaths. But yeah, it's just white polished marble that it seems like it would take a while to clean this thing. And I like that it's really bright. It's not something that's kind of a crypt keeper thing where you feel gross or like you're not legally allowed to be in there. But if you didn't know that all the squares on the wall were interred bodies and ashes of people, you'd think it was like an art museum or a state capitol building or old-timey bank or something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
So you can see how they were originally intended to be visited, and you were supposed to go in and like walk around, not just walk up to where your specific family member or friend was and walk out. Like, it seems like you're supposed to spend some time in there and contemplate.
Sure.
And this one definitely was visited regularly. When the Roseland Park Mausoleum was opened, they had a big grand opening party, and it kind of sounds like a banger. Here's an account of the event from the October 19th, 1914 edition of the Detroit Free Press.
Mausoleum opened in Roseland Park. Thousands attend dedication exercises of new and beautiful structure. Eager to attend the dedication exercises of the Roseland Park Cemetery Community Mausoleum, several persons unable to gain admission otherwise seized ladders found near the buildings and climbed through the rear windows Sunday afternoon. The throng that journeyed out to Westwood Avenue and the 12-mile road to gain information as to the mausoleum idea of interment filled the main floor of the handsome building and extended to the approach of the front entrance. Henry M. Leland said that only one thing was sought in the building of the mausoleum, and that was to make it as fitting and permanent as the everlasting hills. Quote, "We have striven to make it a burial place that will come within the financial reach of all," he said. "Here the bereft can come and sit in privacy with their dead. One of the most important things is the ventilation of the crypts, and the guarantee is made that the air within the mausoleum will always be as dry as it is at present." End quote. There are now 1,300 crypts, but there is plenty of room to increase the number to 13,000.
That's a lot of bodies.
Oh yeah.
It's also crazy that these people were so riled up about getting in this mausoleum that they were grabbing ladders and climbing in through the windows.
Well, they knew that they wouldn't get past the bouncer with the clipboard that has the list of VIPs on it. You gotta get creative.
It's like, oh, are you on the crypt list? No? Back of the line.
There's only one way you're getting in this crypt, and it ain't alive.
It ain't alive, buddy.
Get out of here.
So did you catch that little ventilation of the crypts note in there?
Right, so they wanted to keep it dry, I assume, so that it wouldn't get stinky and dead body smell.
Uh-huh. That's one reason. We are about to revisit one of our old favorite subjects, coffins popping open.
Hell yeah.
They're back in a big way. So I do think we briefly mentioned this in the New Orleans episode, but coffins are typically sealed before they're buried, so none of the gross death gets out. Death germs.
Right.
So all the air sealed in those coffins mean that they have a tendency to float if they're placed in enough water, which is what happens after hurricanes in Louisiana. And when a coffin is buried, all that sealed in air isn't normally a big deal because soil is heavy. And when you're under 6 feet of soil, it weighs enough to keep a coffin closed. Now, when you're placed in an above ground vault, the problem can get a little sketchier, if you will.
Yeah.
Here's an account from a cemetery in London that housed a lot of above-ground burials and mausoleums.
The law clearly instructed that every above-ground burial was supposed to be fully sealed and enclosed in lead in order to stop potential foul-smelling and poisonous gases from leaking out. And therein was the problem. Oops. With time, a buildup of putrid gases as the body decomposes gradually fills the coffin, and the sealed casket becomes literally a pressure cooker. As Josh Slocum, the executive director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance, explains, quote, "When you seal up a body in an environment that locks up heat and humidity, anaerobic bacteria take over. You're going to rot regardless. It doesn't matter if you're sealed or not. But the problem is how unpleasant the consequences can be when you seal it up and you deprive the body of air circulation and dehydration." End quote. Without an adequate way for the gas to exit, the caskets in the magnificent Egyptian Avenue occasionally burped under pressure and, in some extreme cases, even exploded. You can imagine the surprise of the occasional visitor who had found himself a witness to these explosive burps. Or of the average gravedigger who, on arriving at work, expects to find everything as it was when he left his shift the previous day, and not vaults that appear to be open from the inside. That's a little spooky, frankly.
Yeah, it's a little spooky. You just walk into work. You know, you're an average gravedigger. You're not like an experienced or particularly great gravedigger. You're an average gravedigger. And you show up to work and all these mausoleum doors are just open and blown out. And you're like, uh-oh.
Burped open.
Yeah.
Love that this article used the term burps specifically.
Explosive burps.
Explosive burps, which are pretty similar to the ones that I get when I have a little too much LaCroix. If you can have
if
such
you
a
can.
Thing. Impossible.
I also like that Josh Slocum just kind of described it as, well, you're going to rot.
You're going to rot.
You're going to rot regardless. And that is just one of the most confusing things about the way we bury people is people think that there's just a way to make a body not rot.
No, you just, it's like a Ziploc bag. You put it in there. It's fresh forever.
It's good.
Yeah, forever. You know how Tupperware works, right? That if you have some food, but you have some leftover, you want to put it in Tupperware, you just stick it in a room temperature fridge. You can leave it in there forever.
What's the point of having a room temperature fridge? It's unplugged.
The analogous of, you know, the coffins, are, they don't refrigerate these, do they?
No, they don't.
So, you know.
Throw it in a cupboard or something like that.
But that's the thing, is when you seal them, Max, see, what I know you do all this research, but I think you missed a very, very critical fact of science, is that when you put something in Tupperware, it's good forever.
Good forever.
It's good forever. You can eat it 30 years later, and it'll be fine.
You hold it in stasis. I think that's what a vacuum is.
Right, exactly.
It's vacuum sealed.
Wait a second. Maybe the cryonicists are onto something, that when you freeze a body, like, no, they're not going to come back to life.
We just don't want them rotting everywhere.
We just don't want it to stink. What's wrong with you guys?
You ever smell the graveyard?
Ew.
The cryonicists and the Egyptian mummifiers were both kind of on the same tip, and they're just like,
no, it's just we just thought honey smelled good.
Honey smells good. I don't know what y'all are talking about.
Smells better than a dead guy. What are you thinking?
I'm just going to throw him in the ground and a bunch of dogs are going to come eat the bones? It's gross.
Ew.
Freaks. So there's a lot of big name mausolea, like Lincoln's Tomb and the Taj Mahal and all these that are popping open in London. But my favorite might be the time travel mausoleum.
Oh, all right.
I don't really have a lot to say about this because it's extremely confusing. And when you read this excerpt that I have, you're going to be like, what? So if anyone in London knows what we're going to talk about, and I know we have UK listeners, we get the analytics. You cannot hide.
You cannot.
We've got some like Cambridge Analytics style data teams.
No, we're not quite to that point. I think that comes well after the LaCroix sponsorship, frankly.
But if you have any idea what we're about to talk about, the time travel mausoleum in London, I genuinely haven't really parsed out what it's actually supposed to be. So maybe this excerpt that you're about to read from a Mental Floss article will kind of clear some stuff up.
Swinging open the front gate of Brompton Cemetery is a bit like cracking the spine of a book detailing London history. In the middle of the grounds, and shrouded by trees, stands a mausoleum. An imposing 20 feet tall with a pyramid peak, it's made from granite, with a heavy bronze door secured by a keyhole. Decorative accents line the front, furthering the air of mystery. erected in the early 1850s. It was intended as the final resting place of a woman named Hannah Courtois and two of her three daughters, Mary and Elizabeth. Courtois' tomb would be remarkable for its imposing stature and cryptic veneer alone. It's the largest, most elaborate construction in Brompton. But there's more to the story. For the many visitors who make moonlight visits to the cemetery, and for a small band of London raconteurs, the tomb's missing key and resulting lack of access has led to speculation that something strange is going on inside. That it's secretly a time machine. It's a fantastic notion, but one that London musician and Courtois historian Stephen Coates is quick to dismiss. Quote, "It's not a time machine, it's a teleportation chamber," end quote. Of course.
Of course.
Duh.
It's this weird thing, like, it's a big building, but all that's really weird about it is that the door is locked, and there's no key to get in.
So naturally.
Naturally.
Time travel chamber. Is it safe to say that there might just be some people in London who are watching too much Doctor Who and could maybe skip a season or two?
Tone it down a little bit.
Just a little. Take a break.
And I think that's what's it, because they're digging into all these kind of unremarkable things about it. Like, oh, all the buildings in the cemetery have to have plans, and this one doesn't have plans. Even though it was built in, like, the 1850s, and I don't really know how many people cared about plans back then.
English people are weird. I love it.
Yeah. But they're like, oh, well, it's got all this Egyptian stuff on the side, and so there's got to be something to do with how the Egyptians invented time travel. So if you were to go inside, then it's a Egyptian time travel thing. And this is, like, a thing in London. I don't know. Maybe it's just the London internet.
It's a meme, right? It's like how eating Tide Pods is a thing, but no one carefully crafted a reason why they look I guess it's because they look delicious. They look like candy.
They do look very good.
Okay, poor example. I just wanted to talk about Tide Pods.
And maybe this is just a thing so British people can make us look like big dummies. Like, they're like, oh, if we start a rumor that we think that this big crypt is a time travel machine, maybe the Americans will believe us and they'll think we're... I don't know what advantage there is. It seems like a really weird con to try and pull.
You don't know? That's a time travel machine. Oh, you think that's stupid? Yeah, sure. You're stupid.
It's really weird.
Yeah.
It's really strange. I don't really know why they think that they would be able to pop open this big mausoleum and be either traveled through time or teleported, both of which are TARDIS qualities.
It's a solid prank, that's for sure.
Yeah, maybe they'll just open it and there'll just be like a bunch of balloons that'll fall down and it'll be like, you found the key!
Surprise!
Surprise, it's bodies.
Good job. Here's your reward, stinky dead bodies.
Yeah. It's super weird. And again, if you are in London and you have any idea what we're talking about or what this Courtois tomb is,
please explain it to our feeble American brains. We don't get your jokes. We need it spelled out, please.
I tried to watch Blackadder once in high school, and I was so confused.
So lost. I don't even know how many seasons of Doctor Who there are, but I don't know which one to start with. It's all so confusing, and it's not even the same person each time that is the Doctor. You guys are crazy.
I need consistency. That's really all I had on this one. So I don't know if you have anything else to add before I plug something. It's pretty cool, but...
Not especially. I guess I just want to know what the deal is with this time travel. So the next episode is going to be about time traveling in mausoleums, right? You're nearly finished with your research there. You've got a lot of details for us.
I've done the Nick Cage National Treasure hunt, and I found all this. This is what it's led me to.
I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence.
And use it to break into this mausoleum.
And I'm going to kiss Abraham Lincoln's dead body. What a weirdo. Well, hey, thank you very much. It's very interesting. Hey, the reviews are in. Pre-Dead Boys is getting some traction with the crowds, the throngs of fans.
The throngs of fans that are climbing up through our mausoleum windows.
Yeah, we want to thank everyone who is supporting us in the various ways, especially with leaving us 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you do that, we will read your 5-star review on our podcast. And it's like, you are a guest on our podcast in a strange sort of way.
You're guesting in absentia. Absentia. Well, ooh.
Yes.
My Cleveland's showing there. Absentia. I'm mad.
I do not have an accent. Max, are you ready for the best review that we've received so far?
I'm really glad because you told me, you texted me and told me not to look at this.
Yeah, don't ever look at the reviews because I want you to enjoy, I want to capture your reaction to this poetic review. This review is by Mr. Farts. He says, A plus cast.
Oh.
I like the part where it says 69. Nice. So I want to give a shout out to Mr. Farts, whoever you are.
Mr. Farts.
I assume male, but I guess I shouldn't assume. Who knows?
Now, they
who
didn't
knows
say
who this mysterious Mr. Farts is?
They didn't say anything about liking the boyo-yoing sound effect that I thought was very funny.
It goes without saying. So, hey, if you are on an Apple device, you want to leave us a 5-star review, that helps us out immensely with getting this podcast noticed. If you're on any device, just tell a friend. Recommend this podcast to someone who likes to listen to things about morbid topics, but also likes to have a good time, like a mausoleum party that you gotta break into with a ladder.
Break into.
We're all about having a good time around death. We'd also like to hear just general thoughts, and we'd like to hear from you. Talk to us. You can follow us on Twitter at PreDeadBoys. You can email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. You can also join our Facebook group. Just search Pre-Dead Boys Podcast. Should be able to find it. Shout out to everyone who joined the group this week. I see you.
There was a really cute photo of a dog posted in there.
Oh, man. Yeah, so I shared the podcast on another Facebook group that I'm in, and this person followed us on Twitter and joined the Facebook group, but also followed my personal Instagram account. But I guess she was still logged in under her dog's Instagram account.
Oh, that's fun.
I immediately followed the account back, and she said, oh, I'm sorry, I was still logged into my dog's account. And I was like, nah.
No, yeah, I like
to, yeah. That's what I want. I know what I did.
I'm here for the dog content.
Anyone out there who has an Instagram dog or an account for your pet, I will follow you back. I love the pet accounts.
There's a baseball player named Jock Peterson, and he has a dog that is extremely rambunctious that he just brings to games with him. And that dog has an Instagram account. It's really good.
I'm going to look that up later, for sure, and just follow it. Yeah. I will follow all the animals. Hey, if you want to help out financially, help us pay our fees for hosting this podcast, help us upgrade equipment, help us maybe do a little field trip to Detroit or some other mausoleum or cryonics facility or something, we would really appreciate that. You can go to ko-fi.com/predeadboys. You can leave us a $3 or more tip through that. Our intro music is the song About Time by the band Brat Curse. Check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com.
I do have some stuff I want to plug really quick, if that's acceptable.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think when this episode drops, the same day an episode of the podcast It's All Been Done will be released, which is a song-by-song account of every Bare Naked Ladies song that I'm going to be interviewed on. So if you're interested in Bare Naked Ladies, the musical group, and you want to hear me complain about how aggravating their songs are, check that out.
Wow. Congratulations. You called your shot, too. You're like, I want to get on this podcast so freaking bad.
And I also have something kind of serious that I wanted to plug. It's a little something the New York Times is currently running. It's called Overlooked, and I've attached their mission statement from their website here. So, Dorian, if you want to read that really quick.
Sure. Obituary writing is more about life than death, the last word, a testament to a human contribution. Yet who gets remembered and how inherently involves judgment. To look back at the obituary archives can therefore be a stark lesson in how society valued various achievements and achievers. Since 1851, the New York Times has published thousands of obituaries of heads of state, opera singers, the inventor of stovetop stuffing, and the namer of the Slinky. The vast majority chronicled the lives of men, mostly white ones. Even in the last 2 years, just over 1 in 5 of our subjects were female. Here, you'll find obituaries for these and others who left indelible marks but were nonetheless overlooked. We'll be adding to this collection each week as Overlooked becomes a regular feature in the obituary section and expanding our lens beyond women.
Yeah, so again, it's a new intersectional initiative to highlight more people who aren't white dudes. They realize they had very few obituaries about women, especially women of color, over the years, and are turning their lens back to reverse that oversight. I have a few ideas for some episodes about the politics.
I'm just not editing that out.
I have a few ideas for episodes about the politics of obituaries, but I did want to highlight this as soon as possible because it really is rad. And if you need any further convincing this is rad, a recent obit they ran was on Bessie B. Stringfield, a.k.a. the Motorcycle Queen of Miami. And I've attached the picture from the article right there.
Oh, yes.
Which she looks really, really cool.
Damn. You ever just look at someone and think, like, man, I'm probably never going to be as cool as they are?
Yeah.
That's how I feel right now.
Yeah. Her obituary is really interesting. It's recommended reading if you want to check that out.
It's pretty cool. One podcast that I listen to is The Daily from the New York Times. They had an episode that was all about Ida B. Wells, a reporter of a bunch of lynchings and racism in America, that when she died, they did not run an obituary, and they are kind of running it back and reevaluating her life, and they put out a really awesome episode of that podcast. I think it was Friday, March 16th is when that came out, so if you want to look that up, highly recommended. And that's going to do it for us this week. We'll see you in about 2 weeks. In the meantime, please, for the love of God, do not kiss any dead people, especially presidents.
Especially presidents.
Don't even think about it. Nasty.
Dirty birds.
Hey, thanks for listening. We'll see you later.
Bye. Sounding like the intro to Genuine's Pony.
I'm definitely listening to that after this. We should make a playlist of songs that start with coughs. Fun.
And Sweet Leaf and Pony.
Yeah, it's just two songs. Ew. Yeah. Oh, man. That's going to be at the end of the episode.